Sports Week in all. Listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
This is VOA Sunny Young in Washington. Welcome to the 4th of July American Independence Day edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. I walked across our National Mall this morning to our Voice of America headquarters. There will be 4th of July celebrations at both ends of the National Mall this evening. And as the United States of America celebrates its 243rd birthday with picnics, barbecues, and fireworks across the country, the U.S. Women's National Soccer Team is hoping to produce some fireworks of its own in France. That's where the American women will be big favorites on Sunday when they play the Netherlands in the final of the Women's World Cup football tournament. The Dutch women advanced Wednesday evening with a 1-0 victory over Sweden in extra time in Lyon, France. Jackie Gronin's goal 9 minutes into the extra time period proved to be the game winner. And here's a fun Women's World Cup fact about Jackie. The 24-year-old midfielder is a former judo champion who devoted herself full-time to soccer 7 years ago. Gronin smacked an 18-meter shot into the far lower corner before a crowd of more than 48,000 in Lyon. The Women's World Cup final will also be played in Lyon, and recent history certainly favors the USA. The Americans have beaten the Dutch 6 consecutive times by a margin of 22-2, but the teams haven't played each other since 2016. For more on the USA versus the Netherlands final, here's Kwabena Quicksilver-Ofori in Lyon.
The grand finale of the FIFA Women's World Cup is coming on this Sunday after USA defeated England by 2-1 on Tuesday and the Netherlands beat Sweden by a lone goal on Wednesday in the semifinal games, all played in Lyon. The USA-England game was rated as the best of the tournament by some media colleagues, very tactical and aggressive from the start. And in the 10-minute, Christian Press got the opener for USA, but Lionel striker Ellen White equalized in the 19th minute. Both sides raised the tempo of the balance game, and in the 31st minute, Alex Morgan got the winner for USA. At a post-match press conference, coach of England, Philip Neville, talked about his team's missing penalty.
She was the best penalty taker on the pitch when we won the penalty. We obviously couldn't speak about this probably before the games, but for 6 months now, we've probably gone into the most in-depth practice analysis. We missed 3 goals at the World Cup and from penalties, but there is a certain process that we've been to in terms of penalty scoring training, success rate in training, success rate in which area they're going to go to. Nikita was obviously our number one penalty taker. Obviously, she missed 2 goals, and we spoke to Nikita, we spoke to the team, and we agreed that the next best penalty taker on the pitch would take the penalty. That, through process of what we've done over the last 6 months on the field at the time, was Steph Orton. It wasn't just by chance, it wasn't just before the game, Steph, you're taking a penalty. It was 6 months of probably 100 to 150 penalties that the team have took, and you score some, and you miss some. That's football.
Also at the press conference, Alex Morgan, who got the winner for USA, expressed her happiness and thoughts of the game.
Well, I think we saw everything. We saw VAR, we saw a penalty, we saw a red card. It really had it all this game, and I haven't had a chance to look back at the game, so I don't know about the penalty or anything, but I will say that Melissa Nair was incredible tonight, and she had amazing saves, and ending up with the win tonight, I mean, it's pretty incredible. Each tournament for me has given me something different, and I've looked at it through a different lens. Obviously, I have just a greater role being a captain on this team and leading this team in a different way. So for me, it's just so great. I just saw all my teammates being so emotional after the game, and just knowing how much it means to each of us, and doing it together, and having the players that came in, like Lindsey Horan and Kristen Preston, step up so immensely this game was great to see. So I think we've put so much into this journey together, and now we have one more game to close it out. So we're happy to continue going on this journey together.
Meanwhile, preparations are set for the third place game on Saturday in Nice and the final game in Lyon this Sunday. For the Sunny Side of Sports, Kwabena Ofori in Lyon.
Thanks, Kwabena. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the 4th of July American Independence Day edition of the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. We'll hear from American Women's World Cup player Tobin Heath now in this spicy sports package by my VOA colleague Jim Stevenson.
This is the kind of game that World Cups are like, what makes World Cups so exciting, and for us as players as well.
Forward Tobin Heath and the U.S. Women's National Team beat England 2-1 to reach the Women's World Cup final in France. Kristen Press netted a 10th-minute goal before Alex Morgan got the game winner in the 31st minute. Heath says every team is great at this level, but all are different.
You never really know what to expect from your opponent. There's so many different looks that teams can give us, and obviously we're very confident with our style of play and how we want to play these games, but our opponents we have no control over, so we just have to be spot on in the way we want to play.
Star U.S. attacker Megan Rapinoe sat out the semifinal with an injury, but will play in Sunday's final against the Netherlands. Rapinoe scored both goals in a 2-1 quarterfinal victory of her host France and was involved in a Twitter spat with President Donald Trump. U.S. women's goal-scoring celebrations have been branded by some as arrogant, a charge midfielder Samantha Mewis refutes.
I think this team is very humble. I think a lot of my teammates could be a lot more arrogant than they are with how good they are. But I haven't really heard that, and I actually credit our team a lot for being very humble.
Forward Tobin Heath says the team's main focus is moving forward.
We know that we have to play the best teams in order to get to the finals, in order to get to where we want to be and what we've prepared for. So this is a game that we've been looking forward to, I guess, our whole lives in a way.
Awesome, special thing to be a part of.
The first Major League Baseball series ever played in Europe was certainly awesome for manager Aaron Boone and his New York Yankees, winning both games in England against the arch-rival Boston Red Sox. Beyond the contests, Boone felt it was a great experience for both the teams and the fans.
I thought as it got dark and the lights really took over, and you could see, and obviously a hot night, it was a really special environment to be a part of.
The Yankees took Game 1 17-13 at London Stadium before closing with a 12-8 win at West Ham.
It definitely played obviously like a hitter's ballpark, but you know, I think, you know, we're going to rush to that just because there were all kinds of runs scored. I mean, how many plays did the turf come into play? I don't know. How many balls found holes because of it? Hard to really say.
Despite a short outfield at London Stadium creating an advantage for the hitters, Boone said the Yankees and Red Sox had issues on the mound.
It was a struggle for both sides in the pitching department. So, you know, those will be things, I guess, that get evaluated a little bit better when you're removed from it. But it just felt like a lot of good hitters taking advantage of some mistakes.
The opening game was a nearly five-hour marathon.
Looking deep out into the crowd and wondering, they're like, wow, this is pretty long, right? And then I thought, well, you know, cricket takes like all weekend to play, right? So, you know, I'm sure a lot of people are used to it, and they saw a lot of obviously great hitters do some great things. There were some really, really good defensive plays as well.
And one piece of advice to new baseball fans in Europe.
We should remind them that there's not 30 runs every game.
The Grand Slams are the special ones.
Angie Kerber of Germany especially likes this one because she returns to Wimbledon as the defending champion.
It's a traditional tournament. Everybody knows the tournament, so this is the tournament you you are really looking forward to play your best tournament, and that's the goal for the year, to really being here, performance well and playing against the best players in the world, competing well. And I think that's why it is so tough to be here, to play good and handle your nerves as well.
All Wimbledon champions remember one special moment. For Kerber,
the match point, I think, you know, when I really won the last point here and holding the trophy up. I think this is the moment when I'm looking back for last year where I played the amazing final. So this is for me the Wimbledon moment.
The 2019 edition got off to a turbulent start with some first round surprises. Yulia Putintseva of Kazakhstan upset second seeded Naomi Osaka of Japan 7-6, 6-2.
Today I was just trying to mix it up, trying to make it uncomfortable for her and trying to open the court whenever I can.
Then there was the stunning debut of Corey Gauff. Not only was the 15-year-old American the youngest player in the Open era to qualify at Wimbledon, she defeated her tennis idol, 39-year-old Venus Williams, 6-4, 6-4.
Obviously, I'm super shocked, but I'm just super blessed that Wimbledon decided to give me the wild card. I mean, I never expected this to happen. Obviously, I literally got my dream draw, so I'm just super happy I was able to pull it out today. And she played amazing and was just super nice. And she's always been nice the couple times I met her.
Australian Ash Barty started as the top seed, with her perch at the top of the world rankings.
Yeah, it's a new feeling for me. It's kind of something that I've never experienced before, and it hasn't really changed much, to be honest. We're still trying to go about all of our business, all of our preparations the same way. We know that what we've been doing has been working, and for us it's about trying to keep that normality as much as possible. And there's more attention, there's more of that outside noise, but from what we're trying to do on the court, it hasn't changed much. And we'll just keep trying to grow and be better every single day.
Barty knows the young fans are watching her.
I think I try and be a role model by just setting the example of when I play. I don't try and do anything extra. You know, if I can make a difference into one person's life, it would be incredible. But for me, it's just about trying to go about my business the right way. I'm very lucky to have family, and my parents in particular brought me up in a very respectful and certain way, and I try and live by that every single day, regardless whether I'm on the tennis court or just living my everyday life. So I think you know, if that can inspire any person around the world, that'd be incredible.
Simona Halep of Romania was ranked number one and has some friendly advice for Barty.
I didn't have the chance to talk to her. I just congratulated her. She's a great person, and I'm really happy for her. She deserves to be there because she won on all surfaces, so that's great. But she needs a little bit of time, like 1 month, and then she will know better how to manage number one place.
Serena Williams didn't seem to know there was a change at the top.
Wow, that's great. I think Ash is, I don't know anyone that has anything negative to say about her. She's like the sweetest, cutest girl on tour, and she's so nice. She has the most beautiful game, such classic shots, she does everything right. You know, her technique is like flawless, so obviously I'm happy for her. Yeah, it's good. It's good for her.
Williams has a chance to capture a record 24th major.
I can't go in Grand Slams and thinking about records. I just have to go in a Grand Slam and think about just the first match. And if I get that, I think about the next match. And if I'm in the final, try to win one for once. So that's kind of what I think about.
Novak Djokovic defends his men's title, riding on the success of 4 wins so far this year.
It's hard to describe it. You know, there's always extra importance approaching this event comparing to any other for me. I mean, and probably for many other players. You know, this is the tournament that I think a lot of players dream of playing.
His Wimbledon title last year turned his season around after returning from injury.
It was a transition that I was looking for, and this is the biggest tournament in the world, and to win the trophy here just meant a lot for me. I felt a huge relief, and after this tournament last year, I started to play my best tennis, and that got me to number one. So It does have a special place in my heart for many different reasons.
German Alexander Zverev was rising among the elite players, but he failed to rise past his opening round and will need to reverse what's shaping up to be a difficult stretch for him.
It was kind of a typical Grand Slam match for me. I started off well, and then one or two things don't go my well, and everything kind of a little bit falls apart. But I'm not very high on confidence right now when I get to the important moments. I mean, I had, what, 5-6 break points in the third set alone, in the fourth set alone. I didn't lose this match on tennis. It's just, my confidence is below zero right now, because I haven't won much this year.
Rafael Nadal had a good start.
It's a positive start for me, and just I have no day tomorrow to keep working on the things that I need to work, and I hope that's going to help me.
And there's Roger Federer, who was given a higher seeding over his Spanish rival.
I guess the system is, you know, it rewards you for playing a lot on grass or well on grass, you know, and I guess I benefited from that. That was not part of my plan, you know, the last few years, and just happens that this year I get bumped up and Kevin Anderson got bumped up, and but back in the day it was tougher, you know. Guys who were seeded became unseeded, so that was a bigger storyline, I think, than this one. It just happens that Rafa obviously went down, so I think that makes the news. And then you have social media nowadays. They love it.
Federer is pleased to have the rivalries with Nadal and Djokovic.
We definitely became better because of one another, and I don't know if we'd still be playing if maybe we'd have played in different eras, you know, but it's been fun having us. I mean, from my side, I don't know, I hope the fans enjoy it, because I think we're all very different characters. You could like either player. Yeah, we play all the tournaments, you know, we've played for a long time now, so I think people know us because of all the interviews we've given as well, and because they've seen us on the courts.
Swiss tennis star Roger Federer speaking at the Wimbledon tournament in London. Roger has won a record 8 Wimbledon singles titles, with his last trophy in 2017. And thanks to my VOA colleague Jim Stevenson for that spicy sports package. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the 4th of July American Independence Day edition of the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. The knockout round of 16 kicks off Friday at the Africa Cup of Nations football tournament in Egypt. There are 2 matches in the capital, Cairo. Morocco will meet Benin, and that will be followed by a game between Uganda and Senegal. Christopher Green is a former chairman of the technical committee of the Nigeria Football Federation. In an interview with Iron Mike Mbonye, Green said the Nigeria-Cameroon match on Saturday will be tough and very interesting, while the other round of 16 fixtures will produce good football.
Mike, I must confess to you, it's a big match from all standards, and I want to let you know that it has the trappings of an AFCON final. It's reminiscent of the finals we've played with Cameroon before. Cameroon is our rival, and we've held very healthy relationship with them football-wise. But I want to say that only recently we got one past them by spanking them in Nigeria. We ought to be precise, I think 4-1, and pulling a draw, a 1-1 draw in Yaoundé. And I don't think that has gone down very well to them as a country that prides themselves in football. But again, here we are playing again yet what I'll call another final before the final in the round of 16 come Saturday in Alexandria. I see that match as a match that is going to be a fight to finish. Everything will be put in play. Ego, reputation, and everything will be put in play. Integrity and pride will be at stake on that day. But I want to say that right now, both teams are not playing very good football, exciting football, champion football, as you want to call it. But again, this is a match that Nigeria needs to put improve his mettle and come tops. Of course, not forgetting the fact that the Cameroonians also play robust football. They may be slow these days. They may not be playing the kind of football they used to be known to be playing. They may not have played what they did as defending champions before they won the, as defending champions and even when they won the cup. But I'll say that when it comes to Nigeria, they're going to up their game. And for Nigeria too, we also have to up our game. We have to come out from the blocks playing. We don't have to sit back and allow them to attack us.
There are other interesting fixtures for the round of 16 this weekend. Senegal versus Uganda, Egypt versus South Africa, Morocco versus Benin, and some other interesting ones. Can you just take a look on some of these fixtures and how they might pan out?
Well, for Egypt against South Africa, Egypt will pull through, not only for the mere reason that they are hosting and they have a vociferous crowd supporting them behind them. They've got very good players. They've been playing very well. They have a very good goalkeeper. Their goalkeeper is very good. And so with Salah motivating them, I think they'll go past South Africa. Uganda, Senegal will be a tough one, but Senegal may bring experience to bear with the likes of Mane, and it could go the Senegalese way. Which other fixture did you talk about now?
I'll talk about Morocco, Benin Republic, and then Madagascar versus DR Congo.
Well, Madagascar, DR Congo, I'll say these two teams will really slug it out because I can hardly find one overtly or converse being bigger than the other in terms of play. But again, the coach with the best tactic will win on the day, luck being on that person's side. And the other game, Benin, as against
Morocco.
You see, the problem with some of our players in West Africa, you go into the team, you go into the match, and giving respect for the other team. And that may be the undoing Beninua in this game, because they may go there laying down in respect to the Moroccans because of their pedigree. But I want to tell you, if the Beninua will open up and play purely an exciting attacking football, and at the same time their backs properly, they may come out tops. Or if the worst come to the worst, it will boil down to the sudden death situation where they will go into penalties. So, of course, it's a very good pairing. I see all the pairings as even, you know, even the one of Ghana. Everything is even now.
That's Christopher Green, former chairman of the technical committee of the Nigeria Football Federation. And Christopher spoke with Iron Mike Mbonye on the telephone from Port Harcourt, Nigeria. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the 4th of July, American Independence Day edition of the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. In more Africa Cup of Nations news, the Cranes of Uganda have ended their training boycott ahead of Friday's game against Senegal in Cairo. The Ugandan players were involved in a bonus dispute with the Federation of Uganda Football Association's FUFA. FUFA is paying the players an extra $6,000 each, and the Cranes took to the pitch Wednesday after securing the extra cash. In a statement, FUFA said, and I quote, "Considering the magnitude and importance of the Uganda Cranes Teranga Lions of Senegal match, the interests of the nation, government, the sponsors, and the gallant fans, FUFA has agreed to pay $6,000 over and above the agreed terms in the code of conduct." Meanwhile, Uganda's French coach, Sebastian Desabre, says there will be no drop-off in the commitment of his squad in Friday's match. He says the Cranes will give the maximum.
Hi, my name is Colonel Sam Amedur Gitaya, the president of FIBA Africa Zone 3. I want to give a shout-out to the Sunny Side of Sports. Thank you.
Thank you, Colonel. I appreciate the shout-out. We heard from Colonel Amedu on Tuesday's show. He told Iron Mike Mbonye that basketball continues to show good growth in FIBA Africa Zone 3. In Major League Soccer news, let's give a Sunny Side of Sports shout-out for Ghana's Ebenezer Ofori. The 24-year-old midfielder from Kumasi scored a goal Wednesday night to help lead New York City FC to a 3-0 victory over the visiting Seattle Sounders. The win stretched New York City FC's club record unbeaten streak to 12 MLS games. Both New York-based MLS teams are in a tight race right now. New York City FC has 29 points, 6 points behind the first-place Philadelphia Union in the Eastern Conference, and the New York Red Bulls have 27 points. DC United, the MLS team based right here in Washington, is in second place in the Eastern Conference with 31 points. And that wraps up the 4th of July American Independence Day edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer Aiden Utko. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
Hello, I'm Douglas Impoga, host of VOA's Reporters Roundtable. Join us every Thursday as we discuss important African topics and events. I'll have a panel of African journalists and expert guests to discuss the topic at hand. We take a deeper look at important African news topics. That's Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Butte, host of VOA's Daybreak Africa. VOA. When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you the news as it happens. Listen to Daybreak Africa Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC. And our 5-minute newscast come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa. The Voice of America's Straight Talk Africa puts you in touch with newsmakers and experts as they talk about the most important social and political issues that affect you. Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bongo flavor to soukous, afrobeat to ndombolo and makossa to kwaito. The African beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.
This is Science in a Minute.
As a young child, you may have been ordered to eat your broccoli because it's good for you. Well, this sage advice is actually based in science. Past studies provided evidence that broccoli and other cruciferous vegetables like cabbage, cauliflower, and Brussels sprouts may play a role in inhibiting the growth of common forms of human cancer. A new study led by Dr. Pier Paolo Pandolfi at Boston's Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center suggests that a gene called WWP1 produces an enzyme that interferes with the work of a powerful cancer-suppressing gene called PTEN. Working with mice, Dr. Pandolfi and his team found evidence that I3C, a compound found in cruciferous vegetables, can shut down the production of this enzyme that keeps PTEN from doing its job in fighting cancer. The study was published in the journal Science. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
VOA's Learning English is available online at learningenglish.voanews.com. Check out our programs such as Let's Learn English, English in a Minute, Everyday Grammar, and many more. VOA's Learning English, your reliable source for learning English.
The Voice of America's flagship global news program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. We have hundreds of reporters gathering the news and the views of the most seasoned experts on international issues. Tune in Monday through Friday at 17 UTC and 2230 UTC. We're also available online at voanews.com.
Join your host, Larry London, for Border Crossings, VOA's Worldwide Music Request Hour, every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in to hear your favorite songs and artists, win prizes and giveaways, and get the latest scoop from exclusive celebrity interviews. Send in requests to our Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, or call 202-618-2077 to have your favorite music played for the entire world. Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal.
News happens around the clock, and VOA brings you the latest at the top of each hour. Tune in for a summary of the news at the top of each hour, around the clock on The Voice of America. Hourly newscasts on the radio and on the internet at voanews.com. VOA, a leader in news coverage for over 70 years. VOA.
This is VOA News. I'm Gene Randall.